What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us again on the Unknown Strength Podcast. This is episode number 19. On today's show, we have a very special guest, Mr. DJ Jackson, who is one of the competitors on the Boa Super 8 series. Now, that's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or submission grappling event, which is taking place on June 23rd here in Melbourne, Australia. And we recently had on the owner of Outliers Promotions, who are putting on the event Boa Super 8.
Sainaji
is his name, and that was a great interview. And we really like what Sai's about and everything he's trying to achieve with Outliers Promotions.
His Muay Thai show, Roots and Rebellion Muay Thais. One of Australia's premier Muay Thai shows. So if you're into that, check him out.
Absolutely. So we're getting behind the Boa Super 8 thing. We put together this Boa Super 8 series. Previously, we had on one of the competitors, James Brasco, which was a very interesting interview. I'm sure you guys will all love that if you go back and listen to episode 18 of our show, featuring James Brasco. But today we have DJ. Brenton knows a whole lot more about DJ than I do, so why don't you introduce our guest, mate?
Yeah, DJ Jackson, a ferocious competitor from Team Lloyd Irvin. You know, got his black belt in 4 years. He's won the world championships, IBJJF world championships at every single belt, you know, having won it twice, a black belt, 2012, 2015.
Wow.
And he's one of those guys, when he loses, it's like by an advantage or points. You know, it's sort of very rarely can someone sort of put him away. He's always, you know, he's a podium finisher at the least, generally. You know, this year had an unfortunate Worlds, but two guys from his team end up winning the World Championships.
How did he go at Worlds? Who did he face?
Yeah, Murilo Santana, you know, another beast. He only lost to him by penalty. It was a pretty grindy match. I think he was just stuck in Murilo's clothes guard the entire fight.
I know who you're talking about. He's the guy Craig Jones through the flying triangle on at ADCC.
That's the one.
Yeah,
yep,
awesome.
Exactly.
Awesome.
But I don't think it's fair for him to be remembered as that, because Murilo Santana is an absolute beast in his own right. I mean, he's an amazing coach as well.
Yeah.
You know, you've got guys like Levi Jones just won the World Championships, Australian kid, and he
monster.
Trains. Yeah, he trains over at Unity under Murilo Santana in New York. So awesome bunch of fighters there. Yeah, so DJ Jackson, awesome jiu-jitsu competitor. He's got the MMA aspirations in sight.
Was he 4-0 in pro MMA, he said?
4-0 at the moment, yep. And looking to make a run at the UFC. I think he's even expressed an interest to get on you know, one of the contender type series. So yeah, we had a chat to him around, I guess, some of his strategies or some of the sort of approaches he'll be taking towards Boa 8, and, you know, how he studies opponents in general. And as well as, you know, his transition into jiu-jitsu from wrestling, and some thoughts around Australia in general. And very interesting to note, he's looking forward to, you know, he said he's going to kill the division of Boa 8, so that should be exciting. Got guys like Craig Jones and Charles Necromonte, you know, some Australians, Ben Hodgkinson, as well as Robert Dib Frears, James Brasco, who was on the show earlier today. should be an exciting show. And he's also made the shout out to try and get a fight with Kit Dale, so that's definitely an interesting one. And he's claimed he would murder.
Yes, that was bold claims from DJ on that. But so all of that said, Boa Super 8. It's the fourth edition. This event it's coming up on June the 23rd here in Melbourne, St Kilda Town Hall,
Springer's Leisure Centre, actually in Melbourne, Australia.
Love it. Okay, so tickets are available. Check them out on the website or on Boa Super 8 Facebook page. But before we get into the interview, we need to thank our sponsors. So first of all, the MMA Fight Store have been fantastic to us. Their website is www.mmafightstore.com.au. They've got the best range of combat sports equipment, both online and in-store. And a shout out to their new location in Sydney's Inner West. So get on down to the MMA Fight Store, mention the Unknown Strength Podcast and get a 10% discount. Also, we need to thank the Melbourne band Killed by Technology for giving us our intro song, which is their most recent single called Unsociable Behaviour. So please check them out and follow them on Facebook, Instagram and SoundCloud. They're called Killed by Technology. And our newest sponsor, Gripedo, www.gripedo.com. For those unaware, the Grippedo is it's a fantastic grip training tool. It's got lots of different uses, which will suit a lot of different needs from combat sports athletes, especially grapplers. But I'm in the process of using it to its full capability, and I will be reviewing it on an upcoming episode. I know I've said that several times now, but it's true. I haven't exhausted all its possibilities, and there is. You would be surprised, but I have been using it diligently, and I'm really enjoying it. But I need to know everything about what I can and can't do with it, and I still don't have the bucket of sand, which I'll explain to you guys in the review. So stay with us, stay patient, you will get your review of the Grippedo.
And keep investigating, Mac.
I shall be doing just that. We also need to thank our good friend James Tomlinson, JT Tenacity. He was a guest on our show, I think episode 5. But his brand new product, the Jugo, which is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu-based card game. His website is www.jiu-go.com. Tell us a bit about what Jugo is, please.
Yeah, submission orientated card game where you submit your foes by working through a hierarchy of positions and transitions, sweeps, all the way into a submission. And then you finish your opponent. So fun game. Played it with some of my family, and they've actually enjoyed it. They don't do jiu-jitsu, so it's quite accessible to people. The concept resonates. A lot of fun.
A lot of fun indeed. And if you buy a pack of Jugo cards and you get a card with the number 1 or the number 500 on it, reach out to James Tomlinson, JT Tenacity, on Facebook, because he's going to buy those cards back off you. There's a cash prize for cards with the number 1 or 500 on it. So get on that. In an announcement, the Unknown Strength is presenting the Daru Strong Combat Sports Performance Seminar. The Australian tour will include Sydney and Melbourne dates. Coach Phil Daru is the head coach over at American Top Team in Coconut Creek, Florida.
And our former guest.
Indeed. He was on our show a few episodes ago. And that was a monster episode. So every strength and conditioning coach out there who's involved in working with MMA fighters or grapplers, combat sports athletes in general, go back, listen to our episode with Phil Daru. If you're in Australia, get on board with this seminar tour, because his seminars are legendary. Like, people are raving about the run of dates he's done through the US and Canada and parts of Europe. He'll be in Poland, I think, towards the end of this month, presenting at the Combat Sports Performance Summit, which is a big deal. There's a lot of big names in our industry speaking at that event. So the seminar tours, the dates, Sydney on Saturday the 4th and 5th of August, that's 9 a.m. To 5 p.m. both days. It's going to be held at Lift Performance Centre, which is in Redfern. The investment is $850 early bird and $900 regular. So get in quick to snap up those early bird tickets before they're all gone.
Check him out on Instagram as well. I mean, I think that's a good sneak peek of sort of what he's about and his training methodologies and stuff. And you know, you see some of the UFC fighters and he's working with some of those Bellator guys and girls. So
that's right. His Instagram handle is Daru Strong, one word. So you'll get a good taste for what he's about on his Instagram page. He's going to be covering a whole bunch of stuff, which is specifically for for members of the fight community, program design for fighters' performance, periodization for each individual circumstance, understanding the bioenergetic demands of the sport, assessment protocols, special exercises, the art of coaching fighters, power development for fighters, functional range conditioning cars, dynamic warm-up, and he's going to break down the techniques for his top 3 strength lifts for fighters. Okay, so that's all on day 1. Day 2 will be sports and nutrition for combat sports, peri-training supplementation, weight cutting, his 7-day protocol, nutrient breakdown, the benefits of sodium, refuel and rehydration post weigh-ins, and a question and answer session. So again, the tickets are $850 early bird, $900 for the full price. Those prices are in Australian dollars. So you can you just search Daru Strong Sydney or Daru Strong Melbourne on Facebook, and you'll get to the event page, and then you can go through and buy your tickets there. Any questions on anything to do with that, please email me at mac@theunknownstrength.com. And I'll give you the dates for the Melbourne seminar. The Daru Strong Melbourne seminar is on Saturday the 28th and Sunday the 29th of July. The event will be held at the Strong Room, which is in Oakley in Melbourne. And the investment is $500 for the Saturday only, or $600 for both the Saturday and the Sunday. Now, this is a pretty unique event because on the Saturday, Phil will be taking everybody through the lecture, workshop, seminar, educational component of the tour. But on the Sunday, we're going to be watching the UFC live with Phil at the Strong Room in Oakley. We're going to project it up on the screen. We're going to provide food and drinks for everybody. And we're basically going to hang out with Phil, watch three of his top fighters compete at UFC Live on Fox number 30, which I believe is in Calgary in Canada. So it's going to be a really, really cool event. He's Phil's main man, Dustin Poirier, is fighting in the headline against Eddie Alvarez, which will be the second time these guys have fought. It's going to be an absolute cracker of a fight. And also on the card, you've got two of Phil's other longtime athletes, Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Tisha Torres, who are fighting each other. So Phil said to me a couple of times, you know, this is going to be stressful for him watching these two girls that he cares about so much go head to head and fight each other. But, you know, this is the sport, you know. So expect emotions to be very, very high for the Sunday watching the UFC with Phil. And also there'll be an extended Q&A session after the event's finished. So
is this over beers? Is this at the event?
Mate, this is I'm pretty sure there's going to be some beer involved.
Okay.
All right. So, but there'll be an extended Q&A session.
So why don't we call this Have a Beer with Phil?
Have a Beer with Phil Sunday. I love it. But yeah, it's going to be a bit of a hang, man. It's going to be a good time. And what I'm trying to get at is there'll be heaps of value for everybody on the Sunday. You're going to be able to actually get inside Phil's head and shoot the shit with him and actually get some of his secrets. You get the stories about what went on in all their camps and all this kind of stuff. So there's a whole bunch of really, really cool, valuable shit you'll be able to pry from Phil's brain on the Melbourne dates and the Sydney dates for the Daru Strong Combat Sports Performance Seminar Tour. And lastly, we just want to make a shout out to Phil Daru's podcast. Okay, so he was a guest of ours, but he also has his own podcast, which is called the Fight Strength Podcast. His main man, his co-host, Jason Burgos, over there at the Fight Strength Podcast. I've been in touch with him over the last few days. He's a great man. He's actually a contributor for Sure Dog and MMA Sucker. And he's got a fantastic article coming out on Sure Dog in the next week or so on Kayla Harrison, which is
the
pretty...
Judo world champ.
That's right. She's one of the most highly decorated... I think she is the most highly decorated judo competitor ever to come out of the States. So, and she's made her transition into MMA, which is really, really exciting for all of us. So keep your eye out on SureDog.com for Jason Burgos' article on Kayla Harrison. I think we've just about got everything covered there, and we can get straight into the interview. What do you reckon?
Let's do it.
All right, man. Enjoy the interview, guys.
Awesome. Hey, DJ, thank you for joining us on the Unknown Strength podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
I just want to let you know, though, I did see something you shared, and I just want to confirm to you that our existence is real. I know there's some wild claims out there on the internet that Australians are just paid actors by NASA, and I know Kit Dale might be an actor, but we're not all actors, so I understand. You'll see it soon enough, June 23rd, that, or if you're coming earlier, that Australia's a real place.
I'm going to have to see for myself.
Yeah, so I guess you can tell the world June 23rd that, yeah, we're real people, or unless you get in on the conspiracy. which could be fun.
Yeah, I'll just get in on it.
Could be fun.
They pay me, I go to Bali or just straight to Bali.
Just on a holiday off to Thailand, so.
Yeah.
So how's things, man? What's been on the agenda? How are you doing?
Everything's good. I just competed in the IBJJF Worlds last weekend, and everything right now is just gearing up towards the BOA. All my training is gearing up towards that right now.
Hell yeah, awesome. What was the experience like at the Worlds this year?
It was cool. It was a really great experience watching two of my teammates win the world title at Black Belt. We had a bunch of teammates that did well, but really watching my teammate Muhammad Ali and Jamil win go to Worlds was a really good experience. I didn't get the results that I wanted, but always like learning what to work on and just get back to it for next year.
Yeah, man, amazing. Like, so much to unpack there. With your match, what happened? What was the sort of story there? What was the strategy?
I got stuck in a Sao Paulo pass.
Yep.
Just a position in close guard, and I ended up losing by negative advantage. I opened the close guard once, started passing, but then I ended up getting caught there later. And then got a negative for stalling, but then just couldn't get out in time.
Yeah, right. With your team, had obviously made some history. Not only for your team, but I guess sort of the world. With you had Shane Jamil Hill winning the world championships at featherweight, and then you had Muhammad Ali at was he the heavy super heavy?
Super heavy,
amazing, incredible. I mean, your fight camp, your team must be a light right now.
Oh, no, it's awesome. To have just two instead of one would have been great, but two just makes it's pretty incredible to the people you train with every day to accomplish something so big.
Yeah.
So it's like really motivating for the rest of us, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, it's usually the kind of, celebration that the massive teams in the world, like Atos and,
Alliance
and all those get to sort of celebrate, so... You know, when teams like, your team, Team Lloyd Irvin, not nowhere near as big as those guys to get that kind of results, crazy. Are you guys all sort of training in the same school, same academy, or are you sort of spread out? What's the story?
The same academy in Camp Springs.
Man, so you have two world champions come out of the same same camp, same team, same city, gym. Incredible. Amazing. So you're affectionately known, I guess, in terms of your fighter name, is the Ram Man. And when I first heard of you, it was actually the Kimura Kid. I know you fought against, this is going way back. I think at Blue Belt or Purple Belt, you fought against a friend, Dustin Brown.
I remember Dustin in Blue Belt Worlds. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So I remember him coming back and then I was kind of saying, oh man, what happened? He's like, oh, I lost a guy named DJ Jackson. And it was only like a year later, I think, you fought against Kit Dale and had some back and forth matches with him in the gi and no gi at Abu Dhabi Worlds. Been on the radar in Australia for a little bit, so you took out some of our hometown heroes. So it'll be definitely interesting to see you on BOA when we're facing off new guys like Craig Jones, who are our new, and Lachlan Giles, our new hometown heroes.
No, that'll be great. I've known Craig and Lachlan for a while now because they were at ADCC where we met the first time. So it'll be real good to finally be able to fight those guys.
Yeah, right.
I'm still trying to fight Kid again as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually been in talks for a little while. I know I think he's made a few mentions of it like in the last couple of years, so.
Definitely. That's definitely one I want to get back before the end of our careers.
And why is that?
Oh, just because he beat me. Like, we went 1-1.
Yeah.
So we have to see who's better. I don't like it just sitting at a draw.
Yeah, he's always going to have that, I guess, that talking point. Like, he's no decisive winner.
Yeah, I want to settle it once and for all.
How do you think the fight would go down this time?
I'd kill him right now.
You'd kill him.
Straight up murder.
Yeah, real I go to jail murder.
It's funny, like they used to call Kit Dale Kitmura, or at least what he did was like the Kitmura. So. Interesting to see two.
The Kimura Kid versus Kitmura.
Yeah. Don't know if that name stuck with him much further. I don't know. Once he got into acting and all kinds of stuff, it was a bit different. So have you trained with like Craig Jones and all these guys sort of since? Like, do you guys aware?
No, I never trained with him. But we hung out a few times. We talked, but never actually got to train with those guys.
All right. So there's another guy on the fight card, Ben Hodgkinson. Pretty sure he's a guy who actually, quite frequently flies down to Team Lloyd Irvin. So is he someone you've trained with?
Yeah, I've trained with Ben a lot.
Right. So how does So I was going to say, so how does that, you know, how does that play into your mind going into a tournament? You know, is there something recent, like you guys really familiar with each other's games?
No, it's been so long since we trained together. Like, he's a, we only train when he's a brown belt, too. We haven't trained since he got his black. So I wouldn't really, like, rely on any information that I had before.
Yeah, right.
Just because his game's changed so much from, like, over the years and stuff like that. People improve on certain things, so I don't want to be expecting something and have something else happen. So I really don't really pay attention to it.
Yeah, good.
Right. So do you do much research on your opponents or?
Yeah, I do a lot of film and stuff like that, because to see the type of stuff they're doing in competition.
Right.
Is what I mostly want to when I'm researching my opponents.
Right. You don't have to tell us your secrets, but you know, when you're looking at film. When you're looking at film, like, what's the actual process there? Is it just watching it and getting an idea of how they move and compete, or how far do you take this?
Mostly just watching and trying to see what their favorite attacks are, see what they like to do from every position, how they defend certain positions, just so I know, I'll have an idea of what to expect when I'm fighting them.
Yep. So when you're looking at the fight card, this, you know, this bracket of opponents, you know, what are your thoughts?
I think it's a good bracket for me to win. I'm excited to fight Craig though, because he's a similar style to some people I fought before, but I think he's a little bit better at it than those people.
Yeah.
So I'm actually really excited about that fight. Mm. But then I know there's a few other really good guys too, like some strong wrestlers and stuff like that. So I definitely think it'll be a great card.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think you fought against James Brasco last year in a fight to win Pro 42 and inside the hook.
Yep.
Yes.
Tell us about that fight.
I pulled guard. It started off as a wrestling match. I pulled guard, ended up sweeping, coming on top. And when I got on top, I just sat back for a heel hook.
Right, I mean, something that's really, you know, really changed in the last few years. You know, seeing leg locks become far more widely adopted, and a particular focus for a lot of competitors, like, you know, Craig Jones burst onto the scene, you know, with spectacular fashion through leg locks, and a lot of the guys like the Danaher Death Squad, who you've got a pretty good record against. So, you know, what is your take on this sort of transformation in the jiu-jitsu scene, and, you know, how does that impact your own training?
I like it. I think it's good. It doesn't really, for my training, I usually keep my training the same, because I like the fads in jiu-jitsu change a lot.
Yep.
And I feel like it always will come back around to the basics, the more base style of jiu-jitsu. So that's what I like to focus on. But then it also, but I do have to like be aware, and I have to be able to defend. So a lot of my teammates are actually into all the newer styles of like all the DDS, the leg lock stuff. And actually helps my training a lot, because I have these guys to train with.
Yeah. So leg lock's something you're comfortable with?
Yeah, no, I enjoy attacking the legs as well, but it's never been my go-to, but I've always been able to use it, like in a fight with Brasco, like as something else, like something a lot of people don't expect.
Right. And as I sort of mentioned, I think you're 6-0 against the Danaher Death Squad, who are, you know, massive, obviously, household names, particularly in Australia. You know, you've got Gordon Ryan, his younger bro, and Gary Tonin, who, you know, you've had a few matches against. And I think Gordon Ryan's even sort of made some comments, you know, about, because I think you brought up that, they have to, I think in a previous interview you mentioned that you were like the Danaher Death Squad killer. Something along the lines of that, which don't imagine they received too well.
No, not at all. No, but I fought those guys, I think it was like 8 times altogether. I beat them all 8. It was just Gary and Gordon.
Right.
I fought Gary 5 times. I fought Gordon 3 times. And yeah, I always like to poke fun at him. Just he likes to talk about how good he is, but it's, I don't know.
Oh, I guess that sort of elevates you in the rankings then.
Yeah.
It's every time he's boosting that.
Their fans are strong, though. They attack me relentlessly every time I bring it up.
Yeah.
The people who follow them, they.
Yeah.
What are some of the best comebacks that the followers of Danaher Death Squad have come at you with?
Oh, I can't even think of them off the top of my head, but it's just, they all revert back to like how much money Gordon's making and stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
It's okay. like oh, what do you want to win? You want to win a title and you don't get no money for it? And I'm like, well, that's That's a lot of them.
It's crazy. It feels like if you go on the internet and look at like Reddit or anything, you'd think that the only competitors out there some days are, you know, Craig Jones or the, you know, Death Squad guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So have you ever been to Australia before?
No, this will be my first time in Australia.
Yeah, cool. Right. So you're going to make sure you get that intel for the rest of the world.
Yeah, definitely. Also try to survive the trip.
Yeah. Are you not good
with
flying?
I'm definitely afraid of spiders.
Yes. You know, I've had this conversation the other week.
With everybody.
Oh, man, I had a conversation with someone the other week about this. What I find really interesting is so many Americans are scared of, like, spiders and snakes and sort of some of the deadly things we get over here. But, like, I never have to worry about bears or wolves or, you know, mountain lions or anything like that. You know, giant beasts that can actually kill you. So, yeah, I don't know where Australia got that reputation for being so deadly. I mean, it got really deadly venomous things.
I didn't think about that. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, trust me.
Yeah, like a bear. Like, I'm in California now. A bear can roll up on my lawn at any time.
Yeah.
and if a bear's coming at you, I mean, you're not going to double leg that. You're not doing anything. You gotta get out of there.
No, you got to play dead, right? That's what we decided on.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Which is the most...
Is it runaway or play dead? I don't know.
Playing dead just sounds so counterintuitive to me. I feel like laying there and just risking it just wouldn't be fun at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you'll be fine. I mean, you know, especially
you've got nothing
in the city.
To worry about. We're perfectly safe over here.
All right. I appreciate it.
I guess for sort of people who might not sort of know so well DJ or not come across you, you know, how did you get into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Like, what's your backstory there?
I got into it. I was I wrestled for 6 years, wrestled for 4 years of high school, 2 years of college. And my coach went to transfer to another school. I was going to leave and go transfer with him. And I just started training at this gym named Lloyd Evans Martial Arts to stay in shape, during the off season of wrestling. But then, like, I was able to spar with some of the guys, like some of the MMA fighters, because I was my wrestling background.
Yep.
And I just completely fell in love with it. Like, it was the most fun I've ever had. And it was, like, crazy to me how, like, little... It was like, I remember Nyjah Easton, who's a black belt on our team now, but when I started training, she's like a purple belt girl.
Yep.
But she's like 110 pounds, and like she completely obliterate me like during jiu-jitsu, and I didn't like understand how.
Wow.
So it's like, but so stuff like that just made me, it's like, if I learn this art, like if I learn how to do this, like I'll be really good at it, because like people who are so small can do it and be good at it too. So like, I really got into learning it, and then I just completely fell in love with it, stopped going to college, and then started working at the gym and just ran with it.
So if you hadn't taken up this lifestyle, you know, you mentioned you're going to college. What was on the horizon for you in terms of the career and all of that?
I don't know. I was going to get a degree in business, but I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I was just going to school because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's just part of the routine, right?
Yeah. So when I found something that I wanted to do, I ran with it. And like everyone around me told me not to do it, but I was like, screw that. Like, I know what I want to do now. Like, this is it.
And what were you telling them?
I was just telling them, like, this is it. Everyone's, you always hear, what if you get hurt? And I'm like, if I get hurt, then I can go back to school. Like, no problem. So
did you ever entertain the idea of trying to study and, you know, work that lifestyle at the same time? Or was it just all
No, I was all in. I was all in. My parents wanted me to, but I was just trying to just fend them off. But I was all in with it.
Right. So how did you survive, you know, translating from wrestling into full-time jiu-jitsu, I imagine? You know, how were you actually surviving as a you know, just training?
Oh, man, I threw the gi on right away, so that never helps anything when you're just a wrestler. Yeah. But I got beat on a lot at the first year.
Yeah.
But it was only by the higher belts on the team. I always did really well in competition, like versus other white belts. But then, like once I really started to learn, like, how to do jiu-jitsu, like, it went away real fast. I started progressing, like, really fast. Yeah. I got my black belt in 4 years.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. So it started to come together real fast. Matt Lloyd's, like, a super good instructor, too. I feel like he's one of, the best in the world. So,
yeah,
like, it really helps having somebody like that, like, watch your game day in and day out and help you.
Absolutely. I mean, that's incredible. And, like, your team itself produced you know, a vast array of champions. You know, you got a heap of guys who are trained at Atos who came through the ranks and were basically sort of born at your team, Team Lloyd Irvin.
You
know, some, many of them sort of world champions now. So I guess what's sort of coming out of your school is like a system that really works with your jiu-jitsu. So, you know, what do you think it is that sort of makes it so effective? Like why, you know, why is your school producing this sort of level of champion?
Just, I think Master Lloyd is just a really good instructor. The system's like, it's not like, we have a plan on what we do that he comes up with, and we come in, we execute the plan. And like, we have the systems of what we drill and how he teaches the stuff. It's incredible. It's hard to say, like, say it's one thing, but if I had to, I would say just systems. We have like different systems for everything. The way he breaks techniques down for us, it allows us to catch on to it faster.
Right. So do you ever, you know, how much of your training then is, I guess, dedicated to flow rolling and sort of creatively exploring options? You know, do you, is your game, so to speak, is that kind of constructed from you know, your coach, Master Lloyd Irvin, or is it, you know, is that something you sort of find and navigate for yourself?
Right now, I've started to open up a lot more, but the base of it is basically what he constructed. And now I have like where I can open up and be creative in my, like, in my own way without still putting, without putting myself in danger.
Yep.
That's, I don't want to put myself in danger for the sake of being, you know, creative. So I pick my spots well.
Yeah. You know, so I think for a lot of people, I mean, you know, there's such a sort of a different type of, there's so many different types of people, you know, in jiu-jitsu, and, you know, the styles and stuff they bring, and the reasons why, you know, for myself, for example, I find it sort of a really sort of interesting philosophical exploration. It's like constantly sort of problem solving. And so I'm really drawn to that sort of creative aspect of it. How would you sort of describe or define, you know, your mode of thinking in jiu-jitsu, and, you know, particularly your style?
What'd you say? What was the question?
How would you describe, you know, your mindset in jiu-jitsu in terms of what you're trying to achieve and, you know, what your style's about?
Oh, my mindset is always to get the submission. It's always what I'm going for, but I try to put myself in dominant positions before I go for submissions.
Right.
Because like the more dominant position you are in, the more the submission is going to be available anyway. So I try to put myself in dominant positions towards submissions.
Right.
Whereas like some people like for people to attack them, and when you attack them, you expose yourself more for submissions.
Right.
Yeah.
And so essentially, you're describing yourself as, sounds like you sort of, you know, you avoid taking those unnecessary risks. It's high percentage only.
Yeah, definitely. Because even if I fail the submission, I'm still in a really good position.
Yep. Interesting. So what have you sort of been up to, I guess, in the last few years? You know, you came through as a wrestler growing up, and then made that jump into jiu-jitsu, got your black belt in 4 years. You know, has competition in jiu-jitsu been a focus for you in the last few years?
No, I actually started doing more MMA.
Right.
Over the last few years. I just recently came back to jiu-jitsu because I got 2 fights in a row where the fights were canceled at the end of the fight camp.
Oh.
And with that, I started to try to compete more in jiu-jitsu. I had a big gap that was gone from competition because I was trying to get these fights. But I'm 4-0 now as a pro. So I'm undefeated. But I'm going to start fighting more eventually, but definitely I'm enjoying doing jiu-jitsu right now.
Yeah. So what's the plan there? Is there a sort of a reason? I think you've made mention before that, you know, jiu-jitsu events are sort of more paid now, and I think you've even stated do you tend to sort of avoid those competitions that don't pay?
No, yeah, I did Worlds this, but besides the World Championships, I really don't do any other jiu-jitsu tournaments that don't pay. But that's just because the prestige of the Worlds is so high.
Mm. Yep. And then is that obviously because it sort of feeds into things like you know, your ability to sort of promote seminars, you know, sort of that, I guess, that,
well,
the stock.
That, but I think you can promote seminars well with other tournaments now as well. Mm. But just because it was what I wanted to do when I started as a blue belt, you know, like it's not like your middle school crush is still your middle school crush. it's just what I always wanted to do. So I just want to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 4-0 with MMA, you know, what is the strategy? What is the plan for the future? What does that roadmap look like for you?
I'm going to finish out this year doing jiu-jitsu, and then later in this year, towards the next year, I'm going to start fighting more again.
Yeah. So when's the plan for the UFC?
Just 4-0. I think I just need a few more wins and I'll be able to get an intro level fight and just keep it going from there. I think I have a really good style for MMA. I work my boxing a lot. My wrestling is good jiu-jitsu. So I really like my chances.
Yep. Could you ever see yourself, entering one of the sort of contender type shows like The Contender or The Ultimate Fighting Championship?
Yeah, definitely. I actually have teammates that did them before. I definitely would be able to could see myself doing something like that.
Right.
I would like to do a contender series more than like The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
Just feel like it's too easy to make you look crazy in that house.
Yeah.
I don't want them to make me look crazy.
And I was going to ask, how can you imagine that sort of environment? What do you think it'd be like to sort of be in that environment? I mean, does that have a dramatic impact on the outcome and that journey as a fighter by being in a house like that?
I think so, because you've seen people break. Like, people just snap. They can't take it. Like, you're around a bunch of guys you don't like already, and you just got to be around them every day, all day. They take your social media, everything away from you. Can't talk to your outside family. This thing is meant to drive you crazy, though. Like, makes for good TV.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does sort of... as you said, it does look a little bit like a sort of a prisoner in a way, being forced into isolation and sort of like putting dogs in a cage and shaking them up and sort of seeing what happens.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you imagine, your style translating to MMA, with a wrestling background, such a pedigree, and then, you're one of the newer generations of jiu-jitsu. So what are your thoughts about, your style actually translating over to MMA?
I think it translates well for MMA, like top pressure, good wrestling. I just don't think it's smart for when jiu-jitsu guys who are primarily guard players going to MMA.
Yeah.
Just because I know it's a lot harder of a transition. But a few people have been doing it, so it's been working out well for them as well.
Yeah. As being one of the sort of newer generations of jiu-jitsu, do you think that brings you sort of a different edge into MMA? Like, do you think jiu-jitsu's been evolving such that, it's still going to have a place in mixed martial arts, or where do you see it going?
No, definitely. I think people who, like, jiu-jitsu is always going to have a strong place in mixed martial arts. You see how, like, people like Damian Maia can just use only jiu-jitsu and reach the highest level of MMA. Whereas, like, when people who, it always gives you a chance to win. Like, even if you're, like, a really good boxer, can have that taken away from them. Like, jiu-jitsu, it's always there. As long as you're awake, it's there.
Yep.
I like that.
So with, like, a wrestling base, I mean, I think, you always see that the wrestlers typically have that advantage in MMA because you can dictate whether the fight's going to stay on the feet or whether it's going to go to the ground. I don't think you really see, particularly now in MMA, that there isn't exactly like an endless supply of top-tier wrestlers who actually also have, amazing submissions, that sort of combination such as yourself.
Yeah. But it's because a lot of the good wrestlers focus more on ground and pound, which is good, but I still like to be able to end matches, Like ground and pound is great, but if the guy's tough, you're just going to be punching him in the face forever.
Yeah.
You have to be able to actually submit people too. That's where I think a lot of those top tier wrestlers are not doing right now.
Right. Is there any sort of fighters in MMA I think that you're looking at and I guess sort of seeking to sort of emulate, or have you got sort of your own style that you're sort of bringing into it? Are there some inspirations there?
Kind of like Frankie Edgar would be probably my biggest inspiration to how I fight. But I feel like I'd have a lot better submissions, but he would be who I would probably try to imitate my game as.
Right.
Yeah.
So in what weight class are you actually looking to, sort of take your MMA career further?
When I get further in my career, I'll have to do lightweight just because welterweights are too big. But right now where I'm at, like 4-0 is a pro, I've been fighting at welterweight.
Right.
But once I get to a higher organization, I'm going to have to move to light.
Right. I mean, which is quite interesting because you're coming over to Boa fighting in a, I think if it was to translate, to pounds, it's probably more like a, you're at a nearly 205 type, 200 pound 88 range.
88 kg, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's actually a lot of weight you'd have to drop. Is that a sort of difficult weight for you to get down to?
No. What is that in pounds? Like 186? 185?
If you were to cut down from like the 88 kilos or 88 kilos around about 190 I think.
About the 190 mark.
Yeah, no, I'm about right now. I'm probably about 197. So, yeah, the weight's no problem.
And then you'd be, but then you'd be talking about going down to
155. So that's a big drop.
Yeah, no, that drop would be really bad. That's why it'd have to be later in the career.
Because
I wouldn't be able to, make that weight often.
Yeah, for sure. But there's, you know, that's just the kind of numbers that a lot of guys at that level are dropping these days. There's some, you know, some very big and dangerous weight cuts we've seen.
Yeah, they are. It's just, but I'm, it's just the way everyone cuts. So.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, it does appear that the organizations are doing things in the fighters' best interests, things like banning the IV and stuff like that. So. It is regulated, but I mean, it's still a very dangerous thing.
Yeah, definitely. I know 1FC has it, so you can't cut at all, where the weight classes are, they're fixed up. So you have to weigh in, if the weight class is 170, you have to weigh in 170 3 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure people didn't cut, because I think someone actually died.
Yeah, okay. But that's, you know, that's the kind of reaction you'd expect with, you know, something as extreme as someone dying. But you know, how well experienced with cuts like that are you, mate?
Yeah, pretty. My biggest cut probably is about 30 pounds.
Hmm.
Yeah, I haven't gone over that yet.
Okay. And what are some of the, you know, what are some of the ways you're dropping 30 pounds? I mean, you know, remember, this is a strength and conditioning podcast. Be good to get some inside info out of you.
Yeah. Water load. Just start drinking 2 gallons of water, like for say 2 weeks or like a month out.
Mm.
I'm drinking 2 gallons of water, and then right before I add another gallon to it so I can trick my body into losing the water weight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do that, but you've obviously found a way that works for you. But for 30 pounds, I mean, you know, when you start dropping down to lightweight, 155, I imagine you'll be changing your training, changing most things about your diet and your supplementation.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't start to cut from where I am now. I'd probably start to cut down closer to about 175, 180.
Yeah, yeah, that's smart. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a nutritional sort of weakness that you know, Krispy Kremes or something that sort of sucks you in?
Oh, sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Candy yams. It's like, yeah, it's like just one of the things my mom makes every Thanksgiving.
Right.
But yeah, there's places you go buy it, so I get a lot more. But it's one of those, just one of those things.
Wow, candy yams. Yeah. Man, here we were candy expecting yams. We're expecting Oreos, Twinkies, ice cream.
Candy yams. Yeah, I can never turn them away.
Wow. Is that even a thing in Australia? I've never even heard of it.
Sweet potato, yeah.
Candy yams, because sweet potato, I thought I was being healthy eating sweet potato.
No, sweet potatoes are healthy, but candy yams are not healthy.
So what it sounds like.
Candied yams.
What are they?
Right,
yeah.
So dipped in sugar.
Basically.
Yeah, man, America's crazy. You guys have some insane stuff. I think, like,
yeah.
You know, you're going to be shocked. Like, your minimum drink size, I think, over there is like our large.
Our super size.
It's incredible. Like, and you can refill everything there.
Yeah.
It's not hard to get calories in the States.
Not at all.
Awesome. So as far as training, you know, what does your training program look like? You know, do you have much strength and conditioning involved? You know, what's a schedule like?
I haven't been doing much strength and conditioning recently, but I'm actually going to get back into it soon. I was just talking to a specialist about getting my strength and conditioning program right for the next year.
Mm.
But right now I'm just training twice a day, in the morning and at night. Depending on how my body feels, one of those training sessions would be drilling, but just training, drilling, and then rolling, drilling, and rolling. Mm.
Right.
So, sorry, just back to the strength and conditioning specialist you're talking to. Who is that, might I ask?
Dr. Troy. He specializes in, he's in LA.
Hmm.
He's worked with some big time jiu-jitsu guys and stuff like that. So
cool. Did you say Dr. Troy?
Troy, yeah.
Okay. Does he have a surname?
Sam. Yeah.
Got it.
Interesting.
Fantastic.
So what's the goal there with strength and conditioning? Is it something that was, you know, was that a big part of your training in the past? How did that factor in?
When I was like a purple belt, it was. But then I kind of got away from it when I started doing more MMA because I started taking the times that I would do strength and conditioning and work on boxing.
Right.
Or my wrestling more, something like that. But then I want to get back more into it more now.
And so why is that?
Just to be faster and more conditioned. Mine has always been more, I always wanted to have better cardio. Usually it's kind of, you have to choose between getting cardio and getting big for most people.
Right.
So I always wanted to lean more toward the cardio side.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, you've obviously got guys like examples, like, you know, John Jones, a light heavyweight, when he took time off, basically, you know, picked up powerlifting and came back. Do you think that was something that was sort of positive or negative? You know, do you look to that as examples?
No, I think as long as it's working for him, it's doing good. He just keeps beating he keeps killing everybody. But I was interested to see how his body will react to putting all that on the weight.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And what are your thoughts?
No, I think it's good for him. I'm not sure if it's good for everybody just because I'm a naturally big dude. Mm-hmm. And so when I start lifting, sometimes my shoulders get really heavy. It's harder. It's gets actually harder to keep my hands up during boxing. Yeah.
So is there a way, you modify your training for that?
Yeah, definitely. I had to stop doing like pull-ups and dips for one of the sessions that we had. Like our upper body session, I had to, I forgot what we switched it out to, but the things that were heavy on my shoulders, I had to lay off of them because my back was just getting too big.
Mm-hmm. But surely there's other modalities you can use. I imagine there's things like kettlebells and modified lifts that you could do to maintain strength and shoulder stability without necessarily getting bulkier, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I can't remember exactly what we switched it out to, but I had no problem getting finishing the workouts. It was those things that I could do. I remember it was with a chain link around your waist, the pull-ups.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
Especially was just really widening my back out.
Yeah. It's good. You're one of the lucky people that puts on muscle mass really easily, I take it.
really easily.
A blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always tough when you're in a sport regulated by weight classes. You got to check the ego at the door when you're lifting because, you know, it's all fine and well to put on muscle mass and look good. But, I mean, when you've got to sign a contract and make a certain weight on a date, you know, that's a totally different equation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, GJ, let's rewind a little bit back to Boa 8.
To talk about there.
Yeah. June 23rd. You know, what are your thoughts about the actual competitors on there? You know, got guys like Craig Jones. You know, you said you're looking forward to fighting him. How do you feel like you match up against someone like that?
I think I match up against him well. He has a similar style to, I think, Gordon Ryan.
Right.
But he attacks more things than just leg locks, but his leg lock style is similar to that. So I think I match up well. I fought those guys a lot. Like, I fought those guys, didn't get any really danger in any of those matches. So I think I'm just going to try to duplicate that.
So what do you think the key is against, you know, like a guy such as yourself who's looking to bring the fight to the ground, but then you've got Craig, who predictably will be, you know, we sort of predict will look to pull guard and sort of attack the leg locks. You know, how do you approach that?
Oh, just always try to attack him so he can't attack me. If I wait and defend, he'll be able to attack. Like he'll let off so many attacks that one of them will catch on. Always try to attack my opponent. So that they're not able to attack you.
Yep. So is there like opponents in this matchup, in these matchups of Boa 8 that, you know, do you spend more or less time on studying their footage? Like, have you spent much time preparing for these guys already?
Yeah, just most of my footage was on Craig, and that's probably the only one that I've studied so far. But I've already done a bunch of footage on James Brasco and Mike Perez, so...
We did have James Brasco on the podcast earlier this morning. He actually did have, you know, quite a lot of positive things about yourself, obviously giving you a lot of respect being a wrestler. And then, you know, we're sort of pressing him on that, saying, you know, how do you, you know, what do you think of someone like DJ and their style? And he mentioned that if he, you know, if he was to criticize your style, he'd be criticizing his own, because he, you know, identifies his jiu-jitsu style is very similar to yours.
Yeah.
You know, that
which was very surprising, because I was expecting a bit more poison, a bit more hostility, a bit more controversy, but no, he paid nothing but respect to you, man.
Nice. That, thank you. I never know what to expect.
Yeah, James Grosko is he's an interesting dude, a bit of a wild cannon.
Bit of a loose cannon, yeah.
Wild cannon, I don't know what the hell that is. So when it comes to sort of studying, you know, guys like Craig Jones, how do you, you know, you sort of mentioned you probably bring the fight more to them. You know, do you have guys in your training camp who can sort of replicate that style? Like, is, you know, have you sort of seen a change, you know, within your, I guess, your camp and sort of around that, you know, now that leg locks are, you know, becoming increasingly a big thing?
Yeah, no, I have teammates who like to do it a lot. I have teammates who are really good at it too. So, like, it definitely helps train, be able to train. Because if you didn't have people to duplicate that training, it'd be really tough to fight people that do that. So it's definitely good to have, definitely thankful for my teammates who train in those, that leg lock aspect, and they love it. It's just like everything else. It's like a big fad. It catches on, and some people love it more than others.
So when you say like a fad, do you think leg locks are something that's going to sort of fall out of popularity, or do you think, you know, it was just
Maybe not fall out of popularity, because they work really well.
Yeah.
But I think it'll still come back to the norm a little more in the next few years. But it's just such a good way to equalize the game if someone is technically better than you in other aspects.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. But you feel like the rest of the sport will evolve and catch up?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So do you think you've sort of seen or come across anything that would, you know, essentially be that new fad?
No, not yet. I don't know if the worm guard's new. I think that's still, not yet.
Yeah.
I don't know what the next big thing in jiu-jitsu is going to be.
You know, so what is your take on things like, you know, the worm guard, you know, seeing things like the squid guard emerge?
I don't really do them in my jiu-jitsu, but it's always amusing to watch.
That was amazing. I remember I went to the States a few years ago, and I saw someone at the Masters Worlds, and they were tearing through the division, and they were this scary combination of, you know, really good wrestling and worm guard. So whenever they was on the ground, tied them up with a gi and was able to sort of wrestle them down. And ever since then, I've quietly wondered why there aren't more wrestlers using the worm guard. I don't know. I think that, you know, if you could take my suggestion and take up the worm guard, I think that'd make for a really interesting competitor.
Yeah. All right. I'll add that into my.
But hey, I think it's definitely something worth exploring. So as far as other competitors at Boa 8, you know, is there any you sort of feel like, you know, maybe you don't want to communicate this or tell the truth, but is there anyone you sort of feel like, you know, might probably give you a much tougher fight than anyone else?
No, I think I'm going to kick all their asses the same.
And so how do you see that going down? What would, you know, on a perfect night, you know, what's the highlight reel that we're going to see the next day?
Miho hooking Craig.
I think that'd be enormous.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts around guys like Negromonte? You know,
I know he's ultra strong. I do know that. But he's good. He's been around a long time. I know he just recently beat Galvao. Swept an amount with the waiter suite. Which I didn't even know was possible.
Yeah.
But he did it to Galvao. So, you know, I know he's really good. So I'm people like guys like that are good. That'll be exciting. It's like a really a good base style of jiu-jitsu.
Yep. Amazing. So is there, and like as far as the you know, you've got Ben Hodgkinson, who we mentioned earlier on the podcast that you've trained with. You know, have you sort of looked into much guys like Robert Dib Frias, who's you know, only recently qualified on the contender series that they had?
No, I haven't looked much into him yet, but I will check him out, because I think one of my buddies was telling me he's like a really strong wrestler.
Yep.
So I'll definitely look into him. before I get out there.
Yeah.
So, it was Hodgkinson that Freer's beat for the ticket, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Which yeah. which was yeah. an interesting match.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just recently fought on the weekend, the Worlds 2018, and, you know, didn't quite have the result you're looking for. What was the response from that? You know, what did that next training session look like for you?
Just the same as it was before. Just keep the same. The goals are always the same. I don't change too much. Don't get too down on yourself when you lose. Don't get too up on yourself when you win. Just try to keep that even keel until you actually get the goals you want.
Yeah. So you don't, for example, you know, do you review the footage from your match, or is it, you know, do you look at that and look for some takeaways?
Yeah, I have a few takeaways from it, but there's no, like, I'm not going to really get into watching. I'm not going to watch that match. Just kind of disgusted with myself. I know what I need to fix. It was an easy fix. That's why I'm just irritated that I made the mistake in the first place.
Right. So when you say you're disgusted with yourself, what's the reason for that?
Oh, just because when I went to go to the Wilson Pass, I got stuck. I did that to myself. Like, if I had just stood up in his close guard like I did the first time, right, I wouldn't have been in a position.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. So, I guess, what's the training schedule going to look like from here on to towards bowl rate?
Oh, just twice a day, 2 no-gi sessions, and then wrestling 3 times a week.
Yep.
I got a wrestling instructor from Navy who comes in. That works with us 3 times a week. So wrestling 3 times a week, and then morning and night every other day.
Yep.
For training.
So for someone, I guess, at your level of caliber with wrestling jiu-jitsu, you know, you've won the world championships pretty much at every belt, if I'm not mistaken. Won the world black belt twice, 2012, 2015. And you made mention that, particularly in your team, in your camp, you sort of have systems that you place in your training. So what does the process look like for you adding a new technique into your game?
Oh, it kind of starts off, I guess, it depends on whether I'm adding it or if it's something that we're doing as a team. Because usually the ones we do as a team are much more in-depth. But if I'm adding something, I'll just find places in my game where I can open up and add it in.
You're right.
Like, that I already naturally do. So I don't have to put myself too far out of where I want to be.
Yeah, because I'm curious. You mentioned that, you know, you don't really sort of you're not creatively looking for trying to take risks by being extra creative. So how do you personally pick up new techniques, or how do you identify that you want to add them into your game?
This is what I think. If something that happens, like for instance, Craig Jones, like the way I tap James Brasco,
yeah,
it's something that I picked up from watching the film of Craig Jones, like his backstep from top half guard,
right,
where he backsteps to the interior heel hook, and so I started doing it from top half guard because I end up there a lot. I'm always smashing half guard,
yeah,
but instead of smashing and trying to pass, the backstep's been a really high percentage move for me,
right. So is it something like more of an aha moment, you seeing that technique, or do you take a sort of analytical approach to it and maybe look at it and go, okay, this is effective from this position, I'll just add it in, or is that something that inspires you?
It's kind of something I try to add in everything that I see that I like. I'll attempt to add it into my game,
right,
to see if there's a place for it.
Are these sort of techniques that you just explore in free rolling, or do you have sessions dedicating to it? You know, how do you go about this?
Usually just exploring. And free rolling,
yep.
Like when you're paired up with the lower belt or something like that.
Yep, incredible.
So,
you know, imagining, let's say, you know, you're fighting Craig Jones and you're on top of half guard. Is a heel hook something you would look to attack on him?
Yeah, I can't tell you that. I gotta keep him surprised.
But I tell you what, I mean, the world would be a light if you do land a, you know, an inside heel hook on Craig Jones.
Yeah.
You'll have to start selling DVDs.
Oh, definitely I will.
Do you have any DVDs?
I heel hook the down under.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of definitely adds it to like a very limited collection of leg lock DVDs. So
I have Kid Dell produce it.
So what's on the horizon for you, DJ?
I have a Spider Championships after the BOA in July.
Okay, what is that?
It's a tournament ran by Spider Korea.
Okay.
They got a bunch of good guys. I know Keenan's doing it. They got a bunch of different good guys. My teammate Jamil does it as well. I don't know the entire lineup for when I'm on there, but I know it'll be good. Then after that, I'm just probably getting ready for ADCC again.
Right. I mean, 2021. So 2000, when's the next one?
2020.
That's
it. Yeah. No, so 2019?
Yeah, sorry. It was 2017. I'm trying to think. It's 2017 and 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Awesome. Man, so are you doing anything special when you come down to Australia?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a seminar set up with Site now.
Yep. And when is that?
I'm not sure. Hopefully get the information for him and try to get it done either before or after the tournament. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, incredible. I guess so. If anyone sort of listening is sort of looking to go to that seminar, do you have an idea of what you're going to be looking to teach, or anything you can sort of say about your approach as to why people, you know, should come and, you know, check out your seminar?
Oh, I just use the same techniques that I use to work on black belts when I fight them in competition are the same techniques that I teach.
Brilliant.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And so when you come to Australia, you know, you've got BOA June 23rd. Do you have any idea of when you'll be here and sort of what time frame? Sort of what people want to catch you around for that?
Yeah, probably going to get in about the 20th. And then I'll stay after. I don't actually know when I'm going to return.
All right.
Return home yet.
Going to enjoy the holiday?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to enjoy it.
So, you know, coming to Australia for the first time, what are some of the things that you're looking forward to or going to be looking to do?
I want to see if I can learn how to surf somewhere.
Okay.
Apparently, I want to learn to surf, and then I also want to check out the Outback.
Yep. I tell you what, as far as ferocious creatures we do have great white sharks, but don't want to terrify you. You'll be fine.
I know those are out there too, but my buddy from Australia surfs, so
yeah.
He says if you see a shark, just swim back to land before you tell anybody.
You a good swimmer?
Yeah.
No, nice. I think you'd be all
right. I don't know if I can swim away from a shark well, though.
Usually they're mistaking people for seals, so as long as you don't look like a seal, you'll be all right. Awesome, man. Anything else coming up? It's been really good having you on.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been good being on.
How can our listeners get in touch with you, man?
Oh, hit me on Instagram, DJ_ActionJackson.
Beautiful. Excellent, man. And stay tuned for this guy. Yeah. He's making a run for the UFC.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. We look forward to having you at BOA 8. Looking forward to some of the matches, some of the fights you'll be bringing. Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, man. Thanks again.